Good morning, good morning, good morning, and thank you for joining me on yet another episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am your host, Sharifa Hardy, and I have an amazing show for you today. I have some new friends, a returning guest. We're going to laugh, we're going to educate, we're going to learn. So I suggest if you are tuning into this show, please go ahead and grab your notebooks, grab your recorders, grab whatever it is that you need to retain information, because I guarantee you, you are going to learn something today. So before I go ahead and introduce our first guest, I'm going to ask you to do what I always ask you to do, and that is to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. I need you to find someone. I ask you to do this every day. Find someone, find a friend, find a mentor, find a neighbor, find a parent, find a spouse, a child. It doesn't matter. Your neighbor across the street who's walking his dog, he doesn't know the Roundtable Talk Show is live, but friends don't let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So while you're going to talk to your friends, I'm going to talk to one of my friends. You'll definitely recognize her name, her business, her face, her energy, because she has been on the Roundtable Talk Show a few times. And each and every time, we found out how to make our businesses that much better. I want to introduce Belle Walker, the founder and lead consultant of Bellevue Consulting. Good morning, Belle. How are you?
Good morning, Sharifa. I am excellent because I love starting my week on the round table.
Thank you. I love when you're here because you are one of the people, one of the guests that not only return often, but you are a great conversationalist. You ask amazing questions. You have great opinions. So it's like, oh, Belle's here. I know we're going to have a great conversation. What's been going on with you, Belle?
Oh, all sorts of fun things. Although I want to note that it is easy to contribute on these shows because you get some fabulous guests on here that have interesting businesses and backgrounds. So looking forward to meeting the rest of the group today. But I have something new to announce on this week's show that I'm very excited about.
What, Belle?
It is the Business Bootcamp for Nonprofit Leaders. And so I'll post an URL in the comments after the show. You can learn more at NFP as a not-for-profit, nfpbootcamp.com. But basically what we're rolling out is a bootcamp around business techniques for making teams more effective and efficient. Mm-hmm. And I suspect we're going to hear a little more about leadership later in the show today from what I've heard. And organizations like the Harvard Business Review separate the concepts of leadership and management into two different categories. I'm going to go a little crazy and actually propose a different model, the rectangles and squares relationship between leadership and management. I would say that leadership is something that happens in many different places in an organization. Lead from any chair. Leadership is important, crucial, but not all leaders are, can be, or should be managers. All managers, however, need to be leaders. They also need to be able to enable and support their teams. And that kind of training has gone out of vogue recently. There aren't a lot of resources, and that's particularly true in the nonprofit space. So I'm partnering with three other very experienced business consultants, and we're offering a four-week bootcamp for nonprofit leaders to take business for-profit techniques into the nonprofit world that will allow them to improve the culture, better support their teams, and free up additional resources to actually execute and deliver on their important missions.
I love that, Belle. You actually answered one of my first questions. My initial question was going to be why nonprofits? Because you always talk about business consulting and what you do, but this is a specific niche that you have that you're targeted towards right now. So you answered the question as far as why, but one of the things that I've noticed with nonprofits is that they tend to just have the passion for what they're doing. So if their nonprofit is supporting homelessness or domestic violence, it's like they have a passion for it, but they may not have an understanding of the business side or how to operate that business. So it would take great leadership to be successful.
Yeah, and one of the benefits I think a lot of nonprofits have is that they have that passion built in. right? They, whatever their mission is, most of the people, not just in the leadership positions across the whole organization, feel that passion. Unfortunately, a lot of the times they pay a very steep penalty for pursuing that passion, which is the opposite of what I think we as a society want for the people contributing to these important missions. And so that was a lot of the motivation in pulling together this boot camp, was how do we empower and enable those leaders to take better care of their teams, to build non-toxic and maybe even supportive, engaging work environments, and making sure that everyone at that organization has the emotional support they need because they deserve it.
When you, you know, when you speak about a being non-toxic, I believe that we tend to think of the corporate life. You know, all of us like, ooh, you know, I got to get away from corporate. Like, that's just like a nasty taste in some of our mouths. But most people, I believe, don't tend to have that same reaction, you know, when we think of nonprofits.
Yeah. And what I've found is that, honestly, my contacts in the nonprofit world tell even scarier horror stories than my colleagues in the for-profit world. And it's an unfortunate reality. A lot of times there's lower budget, so there's lower pay. There really are, as you mentioned, right, leaders who are following a pure passion. And so they just don't, you know, it's, I don't think there's, not anyone, but I think there's very few, if any, people who went into the nonprofit world and said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to sucker people into this organization with this really compelling mission, and then I'm going to make it awful. Right. That's not the intention going in, but they don't necessarily have the tools. They don't realize that a little bit of investment in their teams, in their people, can go a very long way towards delivering more on the mission. And there are some funding restrictions and requirements that nonprofits deal with. And we will talk about that in the boot camp. But where you do have that flexibility, right, understanding that individual development, support, effective feedback, right, a manager has the potential to be a lever that can really increase the effectiveness of their team. And I don't know that a lot of nonprofit leaders who spent their careers in nonprofit have ever been shown, one, that that's true, and then two, how to be that lever and that support, that multiplier.
I think that's very important. Bill, I want to come back to you, but we're talking about passion. And I want to introduce our next guest, Ms. Jen Drakes. Jen Drakes is a serial entrepreneur. She's a mother, writer, poet, and a podcast streaming influencer and life advocate. Jen has spent time working through what she terms stuff harbored inside that eventually sabotages, and is now using her voice in a powerful way to teach others how to be passionate about life and fully living it. Good morning, Jen. How are you?
Good morning. I am great. And thank you, Sharifa, for having me. This is a great panel. Belle, you started it out whoppingly. I was back there just nodding to so many things that you've said. It's great to be here. One of the Sharifa, you've hit on it, I think, in business, because I ran a management consulting firm for many, many, many years that had different practice areas, from healthcare to manufacturing. There were all sorts of different practice areas. And then one day I, you know, went at a client and I realized this is not fulfilling me anymore. And I think one of the reasons was in growing that practice, I had gone all in. I had put all of my energy, I had built teams, I'd worked on multi-million dollar projects. They were always high pace. It was going, going, going. And it had many snippets of things I loved, but it didn't have enough of each of those things. So at one point I realized I was growing everybody, but I wasn't growing myself. And I could do what I was doing with my eyes closed. So when you talk passion, my passion right now is about really driving people to find their purpose and go after it, not 20%, not 30%, but 150%, and still build businesses, whether you that passion is fulfilled in the corporate world, whether it's nonprofit, you know, wherever that passion is, go after it in a number of ways. I've got a book also that will be shortly coming out called Aladdin Carpets, because I'm one of the things that I have discovered in as I work with youth and young adults about this whole, you know, why am I here? Which is a lot of the question. At the end of the day, they ask it in many different ways, but the bottom line is, why am I here? Mm-hmm. And in doing that, one of the things I discovered that we seem to have lost as we got older and go down our different paths of being a mother is we forgot to dream. Mm-hmm. As young children, we dreamt all the time. And we would embellish those dreams and it would seem insurmountable, but we still believe we could achieve it. And somehow as we got on the path of life and started building our businesses and going down and just being that entrepreneur with all of the different, you know, hit points that entrepreneurs hit, you know, they've got staff to worry about. They maybe, like I was a parent, but I also had staff I had to, you know, think. So it was like being a parent 24/7, and then you forget about yourself. So these are all the pressure points. And my book, Aladdin Carpets, is about dreaming again, mm-hmm. and looking at your life like a tapestry. And if you had to weave that tapestry, what would you weave? Mm-hmm. What would you dream? What would you do? And what are the goals and objectives you need to put in place to lift that carpet up in the air and soar? And really make an impact, no, you know, not just on yourself, but also on those around you. So that's, you know, those are the areas. And so I look at personal as well as business development, but from that self perspective of overall fitness, looking after the mental, the physical, and the spiritual aspects of being, whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a worker in a corporation, but managing what you need to stay healthy overall and still pursue your purpose in life.
And I think that is so beautiful, Jen. That is so beautiful. And again, that's like the theme. Somehow leadership and management came up as a theme today. I'm going to come back to you, Jen. One of the things that you mentioned was dreaming. Now, our next guest, I think he's done a lot of dreaming because he's done a lot of different things. I have the honor of introducing Mr. Rob Swigart. Former technology journalist, technical writer, computer game designer, poet, futurist, archaeology writer, pilot, diver, a keto black belt parent, rumpus room manager. Now he's currently a fiction writer, grandparent, and sometimes urban rambler. Good morning, Rob. How are you? Good
morning, Sharifa. Thanks for having me.
Rob, I'll tell you, just reading that bio, I got tired because I don't do all of that. Like this, the roundtable talk show is the extent of what I do. And then I'm like, that's it for the day.
It's a feature of lasting a while.
Well, we are glad to have you here.
Part of the problem is not sticking with one thing. I used to say my totem animal is a terrier. Mm-hmm. I'll be burying a bone somewhere and I'll see something on the horizon and chase after it because it looks more interesting. So mm-hmm. I'm constantly moving around. I think maybe that somewhat facetious biography enhances that.
I like it. I like different, you know, because I'm like you. I get bored very easily, which is why I need to talk to five different people at one time, because I'm like, oh, okay, I heard your whole story. I've been interviewing you for an hour when I was interviewing one person. And now I'm like, oh, I got to change it up. So I'm like you. But you are an author. You have a new book that's out.
I have a new book that's out. And this is what I'm promoting now. It's called Mixed Harvest, Stories from the Human Past. And very briefly, it's a recount of mankind's existence on Earth starting about 60,000 years ago. And it goes through the transition into agriculture and then into the origin of cities in southern Mesopotamia. And these stories kind of recount in individual lives sort of snapshots of how humanity changed and how human culture changed over those years, particularly in things like religion and family structure and diet. Obviously, our diets changed a lot when we adopted agriculture. Mm-hmm. it's called a mixed harvest because the agriculture has given us, you know, cathedrals and orchestral music and Mozart and fine art and a lot of wonderful stuff. Mm-hmm. But it's also given us plagues and war and inequality and the oppression of women and money and slavery. And in particular, the one that I'm most concerned about is climate change. And it's very easy to recognize in the evolution of agriculture how we began to change the climate. Mm-hmm. We're now at a point where mankind, humanity, is which now called the Anthropocene, because it's now humanity is the major factor in changing the Earth's systems. Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be reversible. So we now have to figure out how we're going to deal with it. And my contention in writing the book was to say, if we understand about the past, maybe we can understand how to change our behavior in the future to create a world of wellness and well-being for everybody. I'm reading a lot of philosophy and a lot of stuff about climate change and social science and anthropologies, because we need to change. The whole species needs to change. We have to understand that we are not in opposition to nature. We are a product of nature, and our behavior affects the rest of the world. Mm-hmm. So if we can figure out a new way of being in the world and thinking of ourselves as members of or parts of the entire global biosphere and physical sphere, because we affect non-living systems like the oceans and the atmosphere, as well as the other living creatures that we're sharing the planet with, then maybe we can tone down our bad behavior and find a way to survive what we've done.
Oh, that is so beautiful. I like that, though. And it reminds me, I have a dear friend of mine, Mrs. Sally Martin. She will be 99 on December 14th. And she loves to tell me stories. So I asked her, I said, Mrs. Martin, can I do an interview with you? Can I, you know, record it? And she's like, no, nobody wants to hear what an old lady has to say. And I'm like, but they do. So she was adamant, no, I'm not getting this interview. I said, but Mrs. Martin, you have great grandchildren, you have grandchildren, there's so much wisdom that you don't, you know, that they will never know unless you tell them. And when I said that, she was like, okay, we can do the interview. So Rob, was part of your motivation for your grandkids for future generations to let them know how the world was and what they can do to make it a better place?
Absolutely. There was a call for letters to the future in advance of the 2015 Paris Climate Accord meeting. And I contributed a letter to my grandson who had just been born in 2014, describing what my world was like and how his world was going to be very different from that. And sort of saying, it's now up to you to take charge of this world and hopefully do a better job than we did. So, I got pushback on that from somebody on Facebook, which is why I'm not on Facebook.
Scare you. You go back on Facebook because I want to talk to you and hear about what your thoughts are. Rob, I'm going to come back to you. I want to go back to introduce our next guest. And our next guest, our topic we've been talking about is leadership. We've been talking about leadership. We've been talking about management. And our next guest is Ms. Carol Kinsey Goman, Dr. Carol Kinsey Goman, who helps executives, managers, entrepreneurs, team leaders, and sales professionals improve their body language and build their leadership presence. Good morning, Dr. Carol. How are you?
I am better now that I'm back. Everything just dropped out. See, I need an IT person. If anybody wants to come to my house in Berkeley.
And talk to Bill. Bill's right down the street.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. West Berkeley. I'm in, kiddo. Anyway, it's great to be back after I rebooted and got back.
We got you. They didn't even notice you were gone. This is what I do, Carol.
I noticed, though.
As long as you have the turn it off, turn it on thing down, you don't need an IT support. That's 90% of it.
Yeah, just reboot.
Well, I am an international keynote speaker, or I was last year. Yes. I was in Kuwait doing a program for Kuwait Oil. I was in Paris. I was in Edinburgh. I was in Amsterdam. I was in London. I was in Brussels. I was all over the place. And then, of course, this year, I am in Edinburgh. I'm in Amsterdam. I am in Paris. I am in London. I am in Istanbul. I'm in Pakistan. And I am doing it all from here.
Yes.
Right here in North Berkeley. Last year, I also was able to write a book. I say able to because with all that travel, I actually had a lot of time on airplanes, and that's a great time to write. Any of you who need a writing tip, you don't have spouses saying, could you fix me a cup of coffee, or kids coming in, or those pets that, you know, that can hop in a life at any moment, which are great, but of course they do take attention. And so I wrote a book called Stand Out, How to Build Your Leadership Presence. And this has been out about a month and is doing super well on Amazon. So thanks to everybody who has helped me. And I've also gotten some fabulous pictures. I have pictures of babies reading the book and dogs reading the book. And my favorite is a woman is mountain climbing. She's rappelling down. She has the rope in one hand and my book in the other hand. So I'm having the best time.
Fabulous.
So basically this book is worth dying for is what I'm hearing.
Apparently. No, I didn't say it. There's also a baby who is just almost two who literally is sitting with my book, reading it and refuses to have dinner because he's in the middle of my book. So I'm just saying, you know, it's pretty good. I'm waiting for his review on Amazon though.
What about the dog? We got to get the dog's review as well.
Yes. Well, there were two dogs. One was little, but he was all dressed up. And I was talking about how if you're petite, and I'm small, that you can look bigger by the way you present yourself, by the way you sit, by the way you talk, by the way you gesture. Then there was this other great big dog who's reading the book. And I'm saying, if you are overbearing, if your reputation is a little bit strong, or if you want to appear more empathetic, there are ways to do that also, particularly right. In collaborative environments, when that's the sign of a leader. Now, it's not so much coming in with all the answers, like sort of that stereotype of the past of this leader was going to come in and save the day. Mm-hmm. It's leaders that we all are, by the way. You don't have to have a leadership title to be a leader.
Right.
And it's just standing up into your own wonderfulness.
Power. Well, one of the interesting things that you said is in probably 2008, for that entire year, I went through this process of like just self, making myself a self-improvement, you know, kind of thing. And one of the things that people that I was working with kept telling me, they said, Sharifa, you're not standing in your full power. You're not standing in your power. Everybody I went to was like, you're not standing in your power. And I'm like, what is this power? Like, what is this you're talking about? Like, I don't even see it. 2020, I understand what they were saying because I was able to step into it. But one of the things that's so interesting to me that everyone says when they see me on TV or when they see me on Facebook, then they meet me in person, they go, wow, you're shorter in person.
Exactly.
And I'm like, what is that about? I don't know, but I'm not like people think I'm over 6 foot. I'm like 5'6". But I think sometimes it's just my presence.
It's absolutely.
I get that a lot as well, is around the boardroom table. I'm very petite. I'm like 5 feet.
Right.
But around the boardroom table, people say that I command attention because there's this little petite lady sitting there. But when I open my mouth and say something, it's powerful and it's presented in such a way that all heads turn because they don't expect it from the stature. If they just look at the pure stature. So I get so much, Carol, what you're saying. But one of the questions that I want to put on the table to you, Carol, is if we could talk about women leaders who feel they have to present like a male in order to lead. And I have such difficulty with that because it's fundamentally something I don't believe in. I think any lady can keep their feminine peace and still lead as strongly and as effectively of any, as any male. So I'm interested in your, in your thoughts on that.
I totally agree with you. I have, I do a program just for women on the power, the power of presence for women who lead. Mm-hmm. And in that, one of the slides is bring your femininity to work. Mm-hmm. Do you know that when I do work in collaborative leadership, they're calling collaborative leadership the feminization of leadership? Because those qualities, that, that ability to listen, to include, that females more typically have than males, not all females. You know, I have some women who could brighten up a room by leaving it.
But
In general, women have qualities that are very underrated by ourselves because we think everybody has those. And then we look at the stereotypic men that are getting promoted or getting higher salaries or getting jobs. And we think, well, we have to be like them. But that is really a mistake. We have to walk into our own power, in our own style, and in our own. And I talk about leadership presence as aligning people's perception of you with your best authentic self. It's not fake it till you make it. It's not pretend to be something you aren't, because you are wonderful just the way you are. But you need to understand how to own that and understand how you may be undermining other people's impression by some of the things that you do or don't do.
Absolutely. So, I would love to talk about that. I would love to discuss it. I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest, Ms. Audrey Davis Dunning. She is a powerhouse innovator, renowned motivational speaker, educator, professional African dancer, and mompreneur. She founded Get Your Goddess, a women empowerment organization designed to amplify women to the next level in 2015 after redefining what it means to be a goddess in both her personal and professional life. Good morning, Audrey. How are you?
Oh, I am so good and so excited about the discussion we're having here today. All of the pieces that each one of you have discussed are part of what I call the Get Your Goddess mission. And every time I say Get Your Goddess, I go like this, because women, we need to get our goddess each and every day. The very things you were talking about, Carol, with your book Stand Out, and the feminization of leadership and the way we do things, I call it doing things goddess style. Every woman has a particular goddess style. Get Your Goddess, the organization, is about women's empowerment, and it's giving women permission to redefine themselves as a goddess. Goddess, because that's a strong, powerful word. It's our belief that all women are goddesses. All women
are goddesses. I need one of those. I need one of those, by the way.
Oh, we can make that happen to you for sure. All women are goddesses because, you know, Jen, you talked about women feeling like they have to be a man or take on man-like characteristics to lead. And then Belle, you talked about, you know, leadership can take on different forms and can be supportive and loving, all right? And Rob, you talked about the impact we make on the world. I tell goddesses, women impact the world. The world, global, we are global citizens, and everything we do makes an impact. So to that end, I talk about goddess in terms of the five goddess principles. It's the foundation of my curriculum. My background is education, so I have a curriculum. I used to run an after school program, so I dealt with the babies, and I've also been in higher ed for 27 years. But here's what I've noticed, guys. Regardless of the age, regardless of the credentials, regardless of the accomplishments, when you talk to women for not more than 5 or 10 minutes, they're going to say something that undercuts their value, that undercuts their body, that undercuts what they contribute. And my Get Your Goddess is what I call a clap back to all of that messaging. So I was very intentional in using the term goddess, because when you say I am a goddess, as many times as I say it, every time I say it, my back just straightens up, right? So I feel like we needed a very strong response, a strong pushback to all of the messages that make us question our power, that make us question our beauty. That's a whole nother discussion right there, right? Right?
Movement
is life. Sharif shared that I'm a professional West African dancer, and African dance was pivotal in me getting my goddess, because it made me take the focus off of what my body looked like to what my body can do, how it can jump and prance and yes. So on that note, I am inviting everyone this Saturday at 2:00. I am doing my online African dance class called African Joy. I call it African Joy because you can't move in these ancient movements and steps without feeling joy and power and beauty. So my dance classes are under the movement division of Get Your Goddess. So getting your goddess is a mindset. It is about the power of your presence. Jen, when you said that, I got chills because literally in my Get Your Goddess definition of a goddess, because we have our own definition of a goddess, the second line is rocking the power of her presence, because we change the energy when we walk in a room. All right.
I know you do, Audrey. I know you do. Audrey, I'm over here ready to dance. And I was like,
Audrey, you guys are going to think I'm pulling this out of the hat. I kid you not. I remember I mentioned I work a lot with young adults, and you would not believe the name they gave me, Original Goddess. They gave me Original Goddess. And the reason they gave me that name, and they stick on it on my Twitch, everything. And the reason they give me that name is they say they come to me for wisdom. They feel stuck. And they want to be able to just put their thoughts into a really rational perspective and get a different lens. They come to their Original Goddess. So they call me Original Goddess and Mama. And I'm so proud of that. So when you said it, I was like, what in the world? Because I hadn't mentioned it before.
But that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I remember in 2018, I want that hat too. And that globe, by the way.
Yeah.
In 2018, when I was going through all these sessions, one of the sessions I had was with a gentleman who was reading me and whatever. He said to me, and I had never verbalized this out loud, but he said, Sharifa, you think you're an oracle. He said, because people come to you and you just give them all the answers. He said, you're not an oracle. You're a goddess. He said, goddesses are even more powerful because they have the ability to create. And I was like, oh, that's good. And I tried to step into that power of being a goddess. So now I'm going to be a goddess and ask Rob, are you okay? Are we, you know what I mean? Are you okay? Because we got that feminine energy going.
I've got two daughters, so I'm in favor of it. I was just thinking, nobody is going to call a man a god.
Right. Right. Okay.
I also want to point out that Gaia, the earth goddess, mm-hmm. is the figure that was used in Lovelock's book in the 70s about climate change.
Oh, wow.
The earth systems was, in Greek mythology, a goddess, a kind of a sometimes nasty one. She can be mean, but it's now a very complex concept to think about the whole earth as the goddess, the creative principle behind all of the systems that interact together as the planet continues to live. We hope it will continue to live and that we're not the parasite that kills it.
Rob, I think that's a fabulous point around no one's going to call a man a god. And I think this is one of the few potential silver linings of the masculinization, right, of godhood and the monotheism, right, indication of a single god that has, we can reclaim goddess. Y'all are stuck without God, right?
Mm-hmm. I irrespective of the topics that we've all touched upon, I mean, Sharifa, you were saying management, you know, leadership, presence. The one word that ties it all together, which even you with your topic, Rob, is nurture.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Everything we've talked about is about nurturing, whether it's nature and the present, you know, and where we live, and nurturing every single thing that's part of that, including ourselves, whether it's nurturing our team, nurturing, you know, our presence. That's the common theme I'm hearing.
Yeah, there was a global study about the number one communication skill of leaders. And 30 years ago, when I started working with leaders, it would have been the ability to articulate and a motivating vision and give us the steps to, you know, to reaching that vision and making it reality, et cetera, which is probably still pretty darn important. But today, in this global study of 20,000 leaders, the number one skill was empathetic listening. And only 4 in 10 of the people that they interviewed were any good at it. So that whole switch to nurturing and empathy and connecting. And I think one of the things that happened for me with this movement from the real world, which I adore, and face-to-face speaking, which I live for. But to go into this other platform is really how much people need connection, and how you cannot lead people through chaos unless you are empathetic and unless you have that ability to understand what their world is like. So I think it has given a real world example to a lot of leaders who all of a sudden are realizing that leadership styles need to morph, just like the time is morphing.
So Carol, how do you move from, because I see a lot of this in even in the clients and the businesses that I connect with, what I call ego management.
Yeah.
And it is the most debilitating on an organization and teams and the people that work in it. How does a leader first recognize they're being egocentric in their leadership? And how do they move from that to the more social, empathetic way of leading?
Well, two things. One is, if the culture of the organization is going into collaborative leadership, then somewhere HR or the leaders that are heading the change need to articulate a set of behaviors that align with collaboration and how you create psychological safety for people on a team, and how you read people's body language. That was one of the things that they found out at Google, that when they looked at what they called social sensitivity, which was what made their team so great, or their great teams so great, was not their technical expertise. It was their ability to socially connect. And one of those things was the ability to read body language. So you have to understand the parameters, and then the person itself. When I coach someone, I never start with, here's what your boss tells me you need to do better or differently. Mm-hmm. I always start with, what do you think you need to do better or differently? Because, and even if it's something way off track, if there's a success with that, that builds a trust between us. And then we can move into things like, here's what your team is saying about you, or here's what your boss is saying about you. How do you think this is going to affect your career? I mean, it's a conversation. You don't just do one of these, unfortunately, for this. You need to, it is something that takes some time and some empathy on the part of the person who's coaching and guiding people, and then realizing that not all people fit a new model.
And you use such an important word there, Carol, when you talk about coaching, right? And I think that's, Jen, I would add to your question, that at an individual level, in terms of tracking and opting in, one of the best things I think you can do is build a check system into place, right? Some of it may be formal in the workplace, 360 feedback, offering a way for your team to provide anonymous but honest feedback that can come to you without threat of consequences. I think that's really important, but also having an external structure, whether that's a coach or a colleague or a peer group, right? If you're at that CEO or top executive level, there are peer groups specifically for this purpose, where there's somebody who has no threat of consequences who can call you on your nonsense, right? And I think having those mechanisms in place is incredibly crucial. And Audrey, I think I also cut you off.
No, it's all good. I love what you said. I just wanted to go back to what Carol was talking about with listening. I have a junior goddess training program where I work with young girls from 11 to 17, training them to get their goddess early, because I don't know about you guys, it took me a while to figure it out. And I want to do a shortcut for them, right? So with my junior goddess training program, Carol, the proudest piece of feedback I get from my girls is, Miss Audrey, you really listen to us. You remember everything we say. We don't know how you do it, but they get that I really listen to them. And that is the highest praise. And in terms of making an impact for the future with climate change and all of the things that our nation is wrestling with, when a woman gets her goddess, it is my belief that she unleashes that freedom and that fearlessness and that power to be who she is in all of her glory. And your glory is different than my glory, than different your, but when we push it out there unfiltered, unapologetically, That's when you see things happen.
Okay, Audrey, where do you live?
I'm in Jersey.
I'm coming to Jersey. I don't know when, but I'm coming to Jersey. I don't know why. I just want to hang out with you and just like soak up some of your just energy for a weekend. I think I could probably only do it for a weekend though, because Monday I'd be like, oh, okay, I'm tired. Like, I'm tired. Audrey's just up. I'm a kind of mellow kind of person.
I got to tell you something though, but I get that feedback often. Thank you. And I praise, I'm thankful for it, but I have to tell you guys, it's because I have a system. It's these goddess principles. Power, beauty.
What is movement. Power, Audrey? What is power? Oh, what is the
power? Power is the first thing. First, mm-hmm. understanding that you have power, you deserve power, and that translates into you get to say what you feel and think. You get to take up space. You get to be at the table. You have personal power and you can make an impact. You can make a change. You can interrupt the pattern. Get your goddess is my humble attempt to interrupt this pattern about all
so
the
we
messaging.
Got a sign for everything. It is so this is get your goddess and that's interrupt.
Because you know I'm a dancer, so I move all the time. But yes, if I have a curriculum, I tell my students, and I have my junior goddesses and I have my grown women goddesses who are part of my Unapologetically Goddess training program, that I, just like them, have to get my goddess every day. So some days it's like, okay, I really need to sit in my power principle because I'm feeling a little shaky, I'm feeling a little off, and I feel like my power is not where it needs to be. Some days my beauty principle, I'm like, okay, let me just embrace my brand of beauty and just rock with it. Some days I need each and every principle, movement. I need to move more to energize and change my vibration. The music, you know what I like? You know why this music principle is here? Music can take you higher. Music has gotten me through all kinds of things. But women, we have our own music, our own cadence, mm-hmm. right? Our own rhythm, the way we walk. You know, maybe that's just my rhythm when I walk in, right? But we all have a rhythm and a cadence in our voice, all of that. And then our achievement is going to look different, you know, different phases in our lives, but to acknowledge our achievement, because women, we don't acknowledge our achievement. We're not encouraged to acknowledge our achievement and say, I did that. I have this. And I contribute that. We're always tend to downplay or we're encouraged to downplay. So get your guidance, putting that away.
But Audrey, all of those things, and I love it. I don't know how you pulled us all together, Sharifa, but we've got such a compliment.
It wasn't me. I'm telling you, it just happens. It's been happening.
I am so amazed at how we compliment each other on this panel. This is crazy. One of my leadership aspects is one, leveraging the nurturing we talked about. I leverage that part of my feminine side. I think we all have music, male and female. So while I know we're kind of emphasizing the goddess aspect, I do believe everybody resonates their own beat. I call that grace. In my teachings, I call that finding your grace. And I have certain, you know, things that talk about how you find your grace. But when you find it, you resonate a beat and people pick up on that beat. And so I'm with you there. Audrey, you go girl. And I think the leadership style, and this also ties with you, Belle, is as you're talking about teams and nurturing them, I, as a leader, let my team members know that I genuinely care about them and they must care about themselves. And so they must self-manage their career. And that as a leader is what I spawn with my teens, and I sit with one-on-ones with them and I guide that, and they do the same thing. They said, you remember, because I asked them, what do you have plans for yourself? Why are you here? So one of my track records is I don't fire people because they figure out either I should be here, I shouldn't be here, I want to be here, I don't want to be here, or I want something, you know, different from myself. I go after it. Because that's the kind of thinking and nurturing I do for the teams. So I build high performing teams that deliver all their projects. I don't have a project that has not been delivered because of that leadership style. But what is nice is you build a cohesive team that cares about each other, supports each other, and knows that their leader literally genuinely cares about them. Because I always say to them, I'm not, when I ask you how you are, that's not just a traditional morning, you know, thing that I throw out there. I generally want to know how you are.
I like
if
that.
I don't I care, like, I'm not going to ask.
I like that. I'm like that as well. Right. It was interesting something that you said, Jen, when you said, I don't fire people. My thing is I tell people I don't argue with people. You know, I've been divorced twice. My kids are 23 and 26. I've gone through a lot. I don't argue with people. So even with employees, you know, I tell people if I give you an assignment, I know it'll take me 2 hours to do it. If you haven't finished it in 12 hours, all that's going to happen is you're going to come in tomorrow and somebody's going to be sitting in your seat. So that's more how I operate. But I want to go back to the music because we were going into the music aspect and I wanted to know if Rob had a poem for us, something we could bring a little, you know, music or joy into our conversation. Just a little bit, Rob. We only got a couple of minutes, but I want to hear something.
You want something about music, but I was thinking about how important music has been in human development. There's lots of archaeological evidence that music was important to the Neanderthals and to the early humans. There are bone flutes and remains of drums. Music and dance, I think, has always been, and movement has always been important in our primate genetic makeup that connects people together. Drumming is a community activity that channels the minds into the same general track. Dance together is communal. We're a social species. It's a problem thinking that this individualism that seems to be an important part of American makeup has been dominating our discourse, that we are exceptional. We can do everything by ourselves. That's not true. It was never true. And now when we have to be partners with the planet and not just with other people and against certain other people as well, we're going to have to learn that this stuff is the most important. So you guys are great. I think
both that's true. It was interesting.
That's awesome. Keep that going. I'm a terrible listener, by the way.
You're a terrible listener?
A dancer.
Oh, okay. No.
Terrible dancer.
No, we won't ask you to dance, but it was interesting something that you said.
Oh, my God.
I bet you cut a rug. I bet you did, Rob. I know you did.
When I was younger, maybe.
When I was younger, I cut a rug. But I was trying to find out, because everybody keeps using this word, narcissism, narcissism, narcissism. And I was like, okay. And I started reading these articles on the uprising or increase of narcissism. And one of the things that they said is because our society has moved in our language from using words like us and we to I and me. And so it's kind of interesting what you said, Rob.
Yeah, well, it's also the whole ego thing that Bella was talking about. And I worked with a lot of nonprofits, and I have to say it's a lot like academia. The fiercest fights are always over the smallest stakes.
Yeah.
People tear each other apart in a nonprofit, and that's no way to get the job done.
Yeah, and that would, Jen,
but
I think.
It's all about ego. And I think that we've gone way too far with that. It's interesting to see that when Biden gave his speech, everybody's talking about empathy as if they suddenly discovered it.
Right.
Well, and that sudden discovery notion, I think, is so crucial, right? And just to clarify, I think Jen and Carol were the ones talking about the egocentric notion, but it's something that I think has been an issue for quite a while. And if you look at studies going back decades, when people changed jobs, the reasons that they gave for leaving their job would be things like, oh, I'm underpaid. Oh, I'm, you know, not achieving enough. But when they were asked why they stayed in a role, it was because they felt cared for, because they felt valued. And I think this is something that a lot of times the younger generations get flack for coming in and saying point blank, I'm not here for the money. I'm here to live my values and put that into practice. And I absolutely applaud that out front statement, because according to the data, that is just humanity. That is what all of us have been doing for several generations, but the Gen Zers in particular know that and are just saying it out loud out front.
And I think also one thing that I've always said that I put all my hope in young people, and because I'm interacting with them on a regular basis, I'm amazed that we talk, you know, there's a lot of talk and promotion about whether or not the internet is a good thing or not. But one of the fundamental things that certainly in this 2020 resonated with me as to why the internet is good is that what it really shows, and as I deal with young people, they've got it right. They are using the internet to connect with everybody globally. Their friendship circles are far and wide borderless, and they don't have preconceived notions of each other because they actually do one thing. They listen and they use their voice to connect without visual, necessarily all the time visuals. So they have to look at a character of a person to decide, do they stay in the chat or do they go out? Because not all their chats are visual. And what it has trained is an ability to be very empathetic, to be very, you know, aware and not, and actually start to enjoy cultures. And one of the things I know culturally, and maybe I'll see who can relate to this, I was brought up in a time where children were seen, not heard. And when I raised my four children, I gave them a voice. I allowed them to actually push back on me, say what's on their mind. And was it easy raising them that way? Heck no. It was not. There were times I stopped and I thought, oh Lord, I need to go. Yeah, there were times I stopped and I go, hey, I need to rethink this. And then I know why I'm doing this, right?
I agree, because one of the things I talk about, that's one of my actual favorite topics that you just brought up and that you just mentioned, because I believe, and I don't know how old you are, but I'm 44. And so my parents, their philosophy was children are to be seen and not heard. So my kids are 23 and 26. When I had my children, I told them, I said, you can say anything you want to me. You just cannot say it any way you want to say it. Mm-hmm. You still have to be respectful. But I believe that when you take away a child's voice, especially a female child's voice, you take away their right to say no. You take away their right exactly. to set boundaries. And so that was always important to me. And now I remember when my son was 21 and he was telling me about this whole situation he was going through. And he said to me, he said, Mom, thank you for talking to me. And I said, no, son, thank you for talking to me. Because how many 21-year-old young men want to sit and have a conversation about life with their mother? You know, they may want to talk with their friends or their girl or whoever, mm-hmm. but, you know, we sit and we've always talked with both of my children all their life. So I definitely agree with you. Wonderful topic. Would love to discuss it on another show. We are coming down to the last few minutes of the show. And what I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching the show live and everyone who is watching in the archives, and let them know what you want them to take away from your appearance here today. And we're going to start with you, Carol.
Well, two things. One is, it isn't just women. There are some amazing men out there. I know we've had a very goddess-centric talk, and I am totally on the side of women. However, I have worked with some of the most amazing, empathetic, encompassing, wonderful males as well. So I just want to spread that. I also want to share my t-shirt because it's my philosophy of life. And it says,
oh, I love that.
Perfectly imperfect.
Yes. I need that t-shirt too.
And I think that, and again, if I'm going to go back to sort of dividing by gender, women tend to think we have to be absolutely perfect before we can be perfectly imperfect. And so I love this shirt. And then, of course, the last thing is, please buy my book.
Yes.
As it, yes. Would, it would delight me. And it delights me just to get the word out. And it's a very inexpensive way to do that. I mean, I charge a lot for keynote speeches and seminars. This is really inexpensive. So I hope that people will take a look at it, buy it. And I hope they'll send me a picture of them doing something silly, outrageous, fun. Dancing is great. I'm a dancer also. I have been since I was 4. You know, I mean, I'm with all of you. And thank you so much, Sharifa. This has been a joy.
You are so welcome. I'll go ahead and get a copy of your book and find out some creative way. Maybe I'll read instead of hosting the roundtable talk show one day. I don't know, but whatever it is, I'll make it happen. And I love that because I always tell people I am perfect in all my imperfections.
Exactly.
So, hey, you just have to be you. Rob, what do you have for us?
I think that what I want to say, besides asking everybody to buy Mixed Harvest, which will give you a good background, it's kind of emotionally, hopefully compelling background in how we ended up as we are today, is to think about the nature of time. I co-authored a business book in the 90s, and we asked a lot of executives what they thought a long time was, and it was never longer than 3 months. Because that's the next quarterly report. Mm-hmm. And we were trying to make a pitch for thinking very long term. And Churchill said, the farther back you can see into the past, the farther ahead you can look into the future. So Mixed Harvest is a way of looking at the deep past so that we can look at a deep future and try to assure that we have one. Mm-hmm. Because the way we're going now, or the way we've been going until Saturday, the prospects are not very good. And I'm not cynical, I'm optimistic, because it doesn't make sense to be cynical about it. That's not going to help. Being optimistic may actually promote getting there.
Yes. So,
thinking about whole world systems, the longevity and transformation of societies so that we become connected and in tune with the world in which we live. That's my plea and hope for the future. So
I think that is so beautiful. And please, if your grandkids do not sit down with you at least once a week, they are missing out. Like, I would have story time and just tell them about all these different things, because you are a wealth of knowledge. Every time we come up with a topic, you give us a little bit of insight. So I appreciate that. Rob, Bell, what do you have for us?
I think this has been an absolutely fabulous panel. I love how everything always comes together. And as we talked about this theme of leadership, whether it's in terms of climate change and this huge big picture at the individual level, I want to return to that concept of nonprofit leaders getting the support that they need and bringing that support to their teams. I think a lot of nonprofit leaders have a lot of innate leadership qualities. They've got that mission, they've got that vision, and when they're ready to bring in that management piece to support their teams at a more structural level, send them to nfpbootcamp.com is a not-for-profit bootcamp.com. Our first session is running starting January 25th, 2021, but we're taking applications now. So really looking forward to spreading this knowledge and helping these nonprofits make their organizations a better place so that they can make the world a better place.
I love it. I love it. Jen, what do you have for us?
I have two things. I'm somewhat different from the panel in that I'm at the individual level. But mm-hmm. the message I think that this panel has shown is, even at that lens, we are all connected. And so I'm about growing the individual and improving them to love themselves, but also to know and have a sense of a strong self-worth. And in doing that, they're able to be empowered to do and work in that connected ecosystem to really move the world forward, whether it's at a nature way or not. And the two things I ask is to join me on my podcast, One Life Fully Lived. It's on Google, Apple, Spotify, Lipsing, but join me on my One Life and Fully Live podcast. And the second one is my book. I don't have it printed like the others do yet, but it is launching. So we have the ability to pre-order, and it's called Aladdin Carpets, Changing Your Perspective to Change Your Life. And I, just what I hope for. And Sharifa, thank you so much. This was amazing conversation. I love everything that everybody bought and how it connected so very well. It was just such synergy. So thank you.
You are so welcome. Thank you for joining us. Audrey, go ahead and take us out.
All right. Ladies, calling all goddesses. I want you to give yourself permission today to call yourself, refer to yourself, think of yourself as a goddess. You don't have to ask anyone's opinion. Just simply decide. All women are goddesses, and you are a goddess. So to that end, here's what I'd like you to do. Go to my website, getyourgoddess.com. Sign up for my newsletter, In it, you'll get my goddess goodies every month. And at that website, you will be able to sign up for the African Joy online African dance class. Dance with me this Saturday, November 9th at 2 p.m. under the movement principle, baby. The more you move your body, the more you love your body. And Get Your Goddess is about you loving yourself. So go to getyourgoddess.com and get on board.
Mm. I love it. That was so beautiful. I love the energy. That was like a commercial there. I edit that and keep that as a little commercial, little clip. I'm going to getyourgoddess.com right now. Going to have to update my name on social media. Now I'm Goddess Sharifa. I love
Absolutely.
It. I want to thank you all for being guests on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. And I especially want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Just because you didn't catch the live show doesn't mean you are not important. We still appreciate your support. We appreciate you tuning in. We appreciate you going ahead and sharing the show. But most importantly, please support our guests. Their information is in the Facebook post or the YouTube link. Visit their websites, follow them on social media. And when you send them that first message, please let them know Sharifa Hardy says hi. Now, if you're interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to change your life in the new year, grab your tickets for my New Year, New You 2-day teleconference, which is December 29th and 30th. Or maybe you want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show. Please visit my website at asksharifa.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.